It's Tuesday, October 28th, 2008, and you're watching Endpoint TV.
Hey, welcome back to Endpoint TV. This is your host, Ron Jacobs, and today we're starting this new series on first impressions. You ever think about the first impression you make on someone? You know, you worry about, is my hair look good? You know, is my clothes wrinkled? Things like that. Well, this is a week of first impressions here at PDC, and a lot of people are getting their first look at WCF and Windows Workflow Foundation in .NET 4. Well, there's been a group of people that we brought into Redmond a little bit ahead of time and got some of them to look at it. We spent a week with them talking about it and thinking about it. So I've brought some of them together to talk about their experience and their first impressions at the end of that week. And so today we have Zoyner Tejada with us to give us his thoughts about the first impression of WCF and Workflow in .NET 4.0. Welcome back to Endpoint TV. I'm your host, Ron Jacobs, and joined today by Zoyner Tejada. Welcome, Zoyner.
Hey, thank you very much, Ron. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, tell me about yourself. What do you do?
I'm the Chief Software Architect for Hershey Technologies. Mm-hmm. We basically specialize in developing content-driven workflow systems for the masses.
Ah, okay. So workflows, big thing for you?
Absolutely. It's a huge thing for us.
Yeah, all right. So this week, you've been here in Redmond, kind of getting the sneak peek at what all these other people are now seeing this week at PDC. And so, first reaction.
Wow. There's a lot of changes coming.
Uh-huh.
Some of them good, some of them bad, some of them, let's wait and see how the final product turns out.
Okay, okay. Honest answer, I like that. I like that very much. We want to be straightforward here. So let's start with the good.
The good? In particular, let's focus on workflow. That's the thing I'm most passionate about.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, I feel they've listened to our pain points as customers. As an ISV, we really struggled in many different areas in WF, and it's clear the product team listened. They responded by implementing point solutions to those problems.
Okay, can you give me a couple examples?
Specific examples are rehosting the workflow designer outside of Visual Studio such that you can actually deliver solutions usable by business analysts or users who do not have Visual Studio on their system.
Yeah. Oh, it's way better, isn't it?
So much easier to do now. I mean, it's down from hundreds of lines of complex component-driven code to a few lines of very simple C#.
Yeah, and it's a WPF designer.
The WPF designer is fantastic. It simplifies not only the usability of the workflow designer, but also building custom activities and building the designers for those custom activities is greatly simplified.
Yeah, I got to say, when I did the lab for the hands-on lab, I was like, wow, this is so much better.
It really is. And the choice of WPF, I think strategically, was a good bet.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is, if you think of workflows, right, what are they? Well, they're compositions of tasks.
Yeah.
Well, compositions of tasks tend to imply a hierarchy.
Yeah.
Well, when you're talking about workflow design and UI elements, what are they? Well, it's composition of user interface elements. What is WPF very good at expressing? Compositions of user interface elements.
Yeah.
It's a natural fit.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and you can customize the designer very easily, kind of skin it the way you want, that sort of thing with WPF also.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, okay, what other example do you have for me?
I would say a couple things that maybe aren't so expressed in the labs are things like that event handlers can now be expressed with activities, right?
So you
have this declarative approach to doing event handling, which is an awesome paradigm shift.
Yeah.
And hopefully this will lead to more code implementation of systems without code, right? You have workflow as your implementation. I'd say as a general paradigm that emerged here is you see an emphasis on code-free designs, right?
Right.
You have variable declarations no longer require code. You have activity event handlers no longer require code.
Yeah, in fact, so the idea of data flow becoming a first-class citizen in the workflow engine is very powerful, right? When you have variables that have lifetime and scope, as well as input and output arguments. I mean, it seemed to me that in the previous version of workflow, you know, you sort of had like properties, and it kind of had to like a global scope. I mean, they were all over the workflow. So, right? I mean, did that cause problems?
It caused numerous problems. The fundamental one was that most people ended up declaring their variables in the workflow code behind at the level scope to the workflow.
Yeah, so then you're dealing with like global variables all
Once
over the
again.
Place.
Yeah, it's like, didn't we move away from that already as a bad practice?
Yeah.
So now you do have, you know, variable scope. You're declaring, you know, at the level of your sequence, at the level of your root workflow, even at the level of your particular activities. And it also makes the binding semantics a lot easier, right? Previously, you know, how your activities bound between each other was a little bit iffy.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Making the variables explicit throughout and having that data flow, as you described, really simplifies the process.
Well, and you know, we don't have these kind of like dependency properties or regular properties,
right,
all that.
Exactly.
I never know which one I should use or when or whatever, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, and the dependency property thing is really verbose, too. It's like a ton of stuff there. So this is much cleaner.
The fact that you can literally come into the property grid for one of your properties, type in the name of the property you want to bind to, that happens to be a variable declared within scope, mm-hmm. and it works, it's
yeah.
pretty awesome.
Yeah, and in fact, so this is one of the interesting things, at least I noticed right away when I started working with this, is this notion of expressions.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it says, like, here's this argument, you know, bind an expression.
Exactly.
And we're so used to in property grids kind of typing, you know, a string of, you know, something else that gets interpreted. But this expression, you could actually, like, in one of the labs where we go call a web service, you type in an expression to new up a URI for the endpoint address. And then it hit me, you know, well, if we're newing up a URI, we could just as easily call a static method on a class that goes off and reads it out of a database, like where's the URI from or something. You could call anything you wanted there.
Right.
So, yeah, that's really cool how, like you said, we're kind of eliminating all the reasons why we had to go write code behind the workflow to do stuff like this.
Precisely. Well, I think if you take a step back, right, and you mm-hmm. look at SOA and service orientation in general as a paradigm, right, you had this notion of service inventories, right? You had each of your services defined, and you would build, the goal was to build applications by composing services.
Right.
What you see now, what's really cool in WebF, right, is the first steps in that towards that vision of saying, well, now you build applications by composing activities,
mm-hmm.
right? And your activities can be services. They can be your custom activities, right? But you build this nice library,
right.
And the glue between those activities has very little code.
Right, right. Okay, so one of the goals of us bringing you guys up here and showing you all this stuff is we want to get your honest feedback, right? So we talked about the good. Now let's we got the good, the bad, and the ugly. Okay, I guess this would be the bad. Okay, what do you find that you just
sure, the bad. Let's contrast it directly with what we started with, design
okay.
time experience and the
right.
designer, right? So the bad is, as it stands right now, the activity design surface is overloaded. It's far too verbose. All those property editors and
right.
you know, windows and toolboxes and text areas makes it very difficult to concisely at a glance understand what the workflow is doing.
Right.
Right. And one of the greatest selling points about workflow is that they're readable by non-developers.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And so if you're throwing all this developer-oriented gunk mm-hmm. at these business users, they're going to get lost and they're overwhelmed in the nuances.
Right.
So, you know, I'm hoping we'll see sort of a view emerge from this that's more concise.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, and you know, so people should keep in mind when they look at this, this is a very, very early drop. There's
yep.
still a lot of time for us to change and improve things. And we want to hear, you know, what people think of it. So, yeah, that was one of the interesting discussions we had this week was about, you know, kind of, is there a role for, say, a developer view of a workflow and a business analyst view? Like, maybe in the developer view, I want to see all that gunk and all the gritty details and all this, and then... You know, like I mentioned, you know, maybe if I was going to have a meeting with the business analyst today,
mm-hmm.
right, I'd probably prepare a PowerPoint slide with a very simplified view of this is what the workflow looks like. I leave out a lot of the detail because, you know, it's just going to confuse them. Do you think
right.
that there's a similar need there?
Absolutely. I think the workflow designer could be supportive of three scenarios, one of which is design review.
Mm-hmm.
And that's with, you know, the non-technical users. I really think it could succeed at doing that.
Yeah.
Right? The other is workflow simulation. What if you just want to build the workflow and run it and see yourself step through it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
In sort of a modeling environment, right?
Yeah.
And the third is replay. This workflow executed. Let me see it run.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Those are all capabilities espoused by having this rich workflow designer, provided it can get more concise.
Okay, okay. Anything else that hits on your list of, not so sure?
I think the biggest part, at least what we spent the most time with, was really the user interface, right?
Mm-hmm.
Most of our labs had, I'd say, 60 to 70% UI time, right?
Right, right.
And so all of it had to do with the inefficiencies there, right?
Yeah.
I mean, when you're talking about, like, setting up the WCF-oriented activities,
right,
setting up arguments and stuff was very cumbersome.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So there's a lot of stuff where you often hear, well, why can't I just do it in code? It's much faster and it's much more succinct.
Yeah.
Right? I think there are some design decisions to be made there, such that the design experience, because the goal is to keep the user in flow, clearly.
Right.
Is not to go to another room to set properties. Is keep them focused where they are and let them set those properties.
Well, and of course, I think my impression was that the design surface itself actually has gotten the most attention in probably the last couple of months. I've seen it evolve dramatically, right? But the property dialogues and all that, I think the team was so busy with the design surface, they just kind of, they didn't put as much into those.
But there's a positive one that we didn't discuss there.
Yeah.
In the property grid, there's this notion of steps in setting the properties.
Oh,
I don't know if you noticed
that. I did
right?
see
They're
that,
numbered.
Yeah.
It's not just category, it's one and category name, two, category name. So it's sort of guiding the user in almost a wizard-like way.
Yeah.
This is what you need to do to configure this task properly. And that's the type of thing you need to have if you really want to increase that level of abstraction and make this accessible to non-developer but technical users.
Okay, so later in the week, you got a look at Dublin, the host, the new host.
Right.
And what were your thoughts about that?
Finally. Right? One of the biggest investments we had to make in building our workflow-based product was building that server.
Right.
That, I mean, honestly accounted for more than 60% of our time.
Amazing.
Right? It's a very complicated problem to solve correctly. It has a lot of ramifications, even on the design of your workflows.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that there's now sort of a standardized place to put this that plugs into the monitoring, you don't have to build the UIs for it, plugs into the configuration, you don't have to build custom UIs for that.
Yeah.
That's a big win.
Awesome, awesome. So now, as somebody's invested a lot in the existing workflow stack, obviously, you know, you're looking at, well, what does it mean that this new workflow engine is just that? It's a new one. It's not a continuation of the old one. And so how did that strike you?
So frankly, that terrifies me.
Yeah.
Right? I think the migration story is one that has to be very carefully analyzed by anyone who's looking to adopt. I think part of the struggle right now is, well, Who are we targeting with the 4.0? Are we targeting new users, or are we looking to migrate our existing base, right?
Right.
I think, by and large, they're looking at saying, let's increase the adoption of the WF platform, right, with 4.0 users. So most of them aren't going to be too concerned. Most of them aren't going to be in my boat.
Right.
But for me, I look at it going, you know what? I'm really glad you solved all these pain points, but I already paid for them. They're covered. They're no longer painful to me.
Right.
Right? So, you know, part of the story that, you know, I want to hear more of, and hopefully, you know, we see more of, is the infrastructure. What has been added to make it really compelling to me to say, yeah, beyond these pain points, we've added some really killer functionality.
But you're really familiar with the guts of workflow,
exactly.
You know, the internals,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. I've had to be.
yeah. I mean, you know, most anybody who's had to work with it for very long has had to learn a lot of these things. And a lot of the internals, it seemed to me, are vastly simplified in the 4.0 model. You know, they talked about kind of breaking down these silos that we had in the old model and, you know, making everything kind of consistent and composable. Do you think it was a good move?
Well, there's two sides to what you just said, right?
Mm-hmm.
One of which is the migration from using local services as your predominant communication mechanism into a workflow instance and switching over to using, you know, receive and messaging in general.
Mm-hmm.
Also, just the design experience of that has been improved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I mean, you know, if what kind of strikes me is when you see a workflow just declared in code, okay, not in XAML, but, and a lot of people don't get this, that you can just go and write some C# and using the new initializer syntax, you can make this nice little hierarchical tree of a workflow. It's pretty cool.
Right.
But it looks very, very clean and straightforward now, whereas, like, if you ever tried to declare a whole workflow in code in the past, it was pretty, you know, verbose and...
Well, that and the composability aspect of it also is the composability of actual complete workflows.
Yes.
We didn't have that before. We ran into that numerous times where it's like, we really just want to reuse this. This workflow took us weeks to build.
Right.
And we want to take this whole block, drop it in as this one activity within this larger workflow.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, this larger orchestration, if you will. Now you can do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, I mean, I was, you know, just working on something like that in the workflow 3.5 environment, where I wanted to create a sequence that I'm calling the retry sequence, so that it tries to do something. If it throws an exception, it'll try it again, you know, n number of times and wait and that sort of thing.
Exactly.
And to build this so that it's reusable, so that you can drop it on a new workflow and people can drop things in it, is a pain in the neck. I mean, right. You got to do like 4 different classes and generate all this stuff, and it's a
what pain. You end up doing is building a while loop that iterates through persistence.
Yeah, like, yeah.
It's a pretty complicated problem to solve in 3.5.
Yeah, yeah, but I think it's substantially easier. I noticed that the whole activity authoring design experience is a lot easier because, I mean, I think this was where the big value is going to come in, right? It's not in so much that we're building workflows, but that we're building a lot of reusable activities that we then can use in the workflow.
Yes. There is a lot of value to that.
Yeah, yeah. So, looking forward with some excitement and some fear at the same time.
Exactly. I mean, it's always exciting to see the new wave of the technologies. Mm-hmm. It's exciting to see the new feature sets coming along that are going to be empowering. But at the same time, the question boils down to, how much open-heart surgery am I going to have to perform?
Well, but you know what, though? PDCs are always this way, right?
Right.
I mean, you go back
That's
to
That's where
the,
you go, right?
Yeah, you only see the bleeding edge, man, you know, and you say, well, what are they going to do? And very often, by the time those things become real shipping product, the, you know, plans change based on feedback. I mean, that's part of the goal, right? We come, we open the kimono, we say, tell us what you really think, right?
Right.
Yeah, so... Well, thank you so much, Zoyner, for sharing with us today.
It's absolutely been my pleasure.
All right. For Endpoint TV, I'm your host, Ron Jacobs.